start of studying, not growing up, but several parts of studying. Three sessions where we're going to have two different readings in order of the book. If they bear any relevance whatsoever to what the speaker before or the speakers afterwards have talked about or are going to talk about, then that's entirely down to the genius of my very good friend Veronica Trick, who's at the back end. The piece regarding the London Corresponding Society, we were hoping to have somebody really well known, but unfortunately, you've got to make do.
Nice to be here. So my pronunciation is my ability to write. So this is in the preface. In the years between 1780 and 1832, most English working people came to feel an identity of interest as between themselves and as against their rulers and employers. This ruling class was itself much divided, and in fact only gained in cohesion over the same years because certain antagonisms were resolved in the face of an insurgent working class. Thus, the working class presence was, in 1832, the most significant factor in British political life. This book is a group of studies on related themes rather than a consecutive narrative. In selecting these themes, I have been conscious at times of writing against the weight of prevailing orthodoxies. There is the Fabian orthodoxy, in which the great majority of working people are seen as passive victims of laissez-faire. There is the orthodoxy of the empirical economic historians, in which working people are seen as a labour force, as migrants, or as data for statistical series. My problem with the first and second is that they tend to obscure the agency of working people. My problem with the third is that it reads history in the light of subsequent preoccupations and not as in fact it occurred. Only the successful, in the sense of those whose aspirations anticipated subsequent evolution, are remembered. The blind alleys, the lost causes, and the losers themselves are forgotten. I am seeking to rescue the Paul Scotland, the Luddite proper, the obsolete hand loom weaver, the utopian artisan, and even the deluded followers of Joanna Southcott from the enormous condescension of prosperity. Their crafts and traditions may have been dying, their hostility to the new industrialism may have been backward looking, their humanitarian ideals may have been fantasies. Their insurrectionary conspiracies may have been foolhardy, but they lived through these times of acute social disturbance, and we did not. Their aspirations were valid in terms of their own experience, and if they were casualties of history, they remain condemned in their whole lives as casualties. Our only criterion of judgment should not be whether whether or not man's actions are justified in the light of subsequent evolution. After all, we entered the end of the social evolution ourselves. In some of the lost causes of the people of the Industrial Revolution, we may discover insights into social evils which we have yet to cure. Moreover, the greater part of the world today is still undergoing problems of industrialization and the formation of democratic institutions, and allude us in many ways to our own experience during the Industrial Revolution.